Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin.
And I'm Sarah.
And I'm in sunny Anaheim.
Jazz hands. I know, it's so weird. We're doing a long distance podcast right now because Devin is at a convention. She's always at conventions, friends.
Apparently. Hashtag con life.
#conlife. But she's at a podcast convention, which she will get into later. Yes. So we're doing this long distance, and you know we like doing it in person better, but we were like, we gotta still put out a podcast on Thursday. We weren't sure if we're gonna do it because I'm still dealing with headaches and they're still there, but I feel well enough to do the podcast. So we're like, there's so much to talk about. Let's go.
I know. Well, and then I just want to really quickly talk about how Trump's stared directly at the eclipse.
Oh my gosh.
Like, you had one fucking instruction for this.
Like, it's so funny because once we stopped recording, that's when that happened. We couldn't even talk about it on Monday's podcast. And it was like, I think someone tweeted something like a fake New York Times push alert, and it was like, Trump looks directly at the eclipse, and they were like, 50% chance this happens. And it totally did. 100% chance it did happen.
I just, again, like a single instruction that wasn't so much an instruction as an absence of instruction.
Yeah.
You know, like, don't look at this. I mean, this is not like.
My favorite was my friend Molly. She's at Einstein Trom. And she did like a side by side tweet where she screenshotted Ivanka's tweet, which was like, don't forget to wear your glasses before looking at the eclipse. And then the picture of Trump looking directly at it. And she's like, I'm just like completely amazed by Ivanka's like overwhelming influence over Trump.
It's perfect.
It's so perfect. It's such a perfect illustration. Yeah. So that happened. And
so what didn't happen on the 22nd?
Well, that was on Monday. So the 22nd was on Tuesday.
On Tuesday, right.
Yeah, so we had sort of talked about a few times on the show about how I saw back in March a post in one of the Facebook groups I'm in about how someone went to like some psychic convention and like the group of psychics agreed that something big would happen to Trump on the 22nd. As far as we know, nothing big happened to him on the 22nd. Right. Although I will say, you know, apparently presidential historian John Meacham predicted on MSNBC that Trump went after the media so aggressively on August 22nd during his rally because of coming news, known or unknown. So I also wonder if we're going to find out about something that happened on August 22nd after the fact.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm like holding on to dear life for August 22nd, but it does make me wonder if we will find out later.
And that really is Trump's MO. You know, like, when he goes after the media really hard, you know it's because, like, some shit is going down behind the scenes.
Yeah, you have to, because he's always going after, like, leakers and stuff. Right. And I feel like there's so many stories that you find, you know, they're like, back in June, this happened. And you're like, oh. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's me holding on for dear life to a random fucking psychic prediction. You know, but as far as we know, they were not right. And we were pulling for astrology to come through, but, you know.
Like, I'm still very dedicated to the fact that I'm a Sagittarius. Like, that's still very important to me. So
I am on the cusps.
Right.
So I'm a Libra and Libra, a Scorpio, which is a really interesting combination.
It is.
Because, like, Libras are very balanced and diplomatic, and, like, Scorpios are, like, very fiery. And I definitely have both sides to me.
And I'm a Sagittarius, which just means I want to burn this shit down, which is correct. There's no both sides.
That's like a Sagittarius.
Yeah, Sagittarius is like bold, adventurous, burn the establishment down.
That's okay, true. Anyway, let's get into what we're going to talk about today besides, you know, astrology and eclipses. So the first block, of course, is a listener feedback. Mm-hmm. And then we get into, again, a permablock, Trumpland bullshit.
Yes.
And we're going to be going in more about the rally that happened on Tuesday and sort of all the issues surrounding that. And then also we're going to talk about an update about the trans military ban. So there's some new reporting there that we're going to discuss. And then block three, we have some Russia updates, which we haven't done in a long time.
But we haven't. That doesn't mean stuff hasn't been going on.
Right.
So there's a lot to talk about in the Russia
section.
There's
a lot to talk about and a lot of new stuff to talk about as well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we always do our gratitude check. So that's always necessary. And then because it is Thursday, we do our Hellion of the Week. And this one's kind of a fun one.
It is a fun one. I love this.
Yeah. And then finally, we have some action items. So stuff you can do after you listen to the show.
So let's get into some listener feedback. What do you have for us first, Sarah?
Okay, so first of all, Emily said, quote, hearing Hellbent's action items about North Carolina redistricting just makes my cold heart grow three times its size. Gerrymandering in North Carolina is out of control and such a complex, somewhat temporally distant issue. The North Carolina political climate is so often ignored on the national stage, and honestly, thank you, Devin and Sarah, for using your platform to bring attention and action to the state.
That's lovely. I'm really, really glad that we were able to talk about something that is so important. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, gerrymandering, we talked about this last week. We'll talk about it again. You know, everyone deserves the right to vote and vote fairly. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, gerrymandering dilutes the vote, essentially.
Right, right.
Voter suppression is definitely like an assault on voting rights.
Right, really vote fairly. I mean, like your vote counting.
Yeah, Your vote should count. That is not something that we should all disagree on. It should not be a partisan issue. And I would say definitely that gerrymandering and voter suppression are definitely priority issues for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely glad that we can put a spotlight on what's going on in North Carolina. And I'm also just super curious to hear what the new map ends up looking like, because they had a proposed map that they shared at these like sort of open
meetings.
So it's, yeah, I'm definitely keeping a close eye on North Carolina. So thank you for that feedback, Emily. That means a lot.
Yes. So next, Tanya said, quote, my spouse walked through the garage while I was listening to Hellbent, and he said, those ladies swear a lot. And I said, fuck yeah, they do. To which we say, fact check. Fucking true.
Fact check true. That is fucking true.
Fucking true.
Yes, it is. We say this often. These aren't subtle times, so yeah. we're not going to hold back. And yeah,
we are not subtle.
Sorry, Tanya's spouse, if you have delicate ears, we might not be for you. And then Elizabeth DM'd us on Twitter and corrected my pronunciation of Nevada. So it's Nevada, not Nevada. Which is funny because I literally never say Nevada. I never say it. But I totally did on the pod on Monday. So I don't know what came over me.
Like, the eclipse.
Someone snatched my body, I think. Yeah, the eclipse. It was definitely the eclipse. I'm going to blame the eclipse.
The eclipse.
Yeah, but thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Elizabeth. That is correct. And then Anna sent us an email. She said, quote, I love the pod so much, but on to a far more important topic, Sarah's health. Just really sweet.
So cute.
She said, we need you both in tip-top shape to smash the patriarchy. Now, I know most people either love chiropractic work or absolutely hate it. If you were in the latter group, please reconsider and find yourself a great chiropractor. And then she said, I suffered from debilitating headaches for years after a car accident in my teens and wish I'd gone to see one sooner. It was literally a lifesaver. Best of health to you both and keep up the great work.
Oh, I love that our listeners are like so caring and compassionate. And when we do talk about like our own like personal stuff, our health stuff, we always get so much response on just like really supportive on a personal level. And it's just, it's so wonderful.
I know. I read this email out loud to Nick yesterday and he said it was like the sweetest thing. He's like, your listeners are really, really caring and smart and awesome.
They are.
Yeah. And I just, you know, it's interesting because my dad was a doctor. He's now retired. And my sister and I used to get, you know, injured a fair amount playing soccer. So like inevitably someone would recommend going to see like a chiropractor. Because that's not super uncommon to treat like sports injuries with chiropractor. Right. But my dad is like very skeptical of chiropractors. And he was always like, don't go see a chiropractor. Like you're wasting your time.
Right.
So that's, I've always kind of been skeptical because he was, but I don't really, like, reading this email, I was like, maybe I should reconsider my skepticism because this could be helpful. Also, Carrie in our Facebook group shared the spoon theory, which, have you heard of that, Devin?
I have. I love the spoon theory.
I think it's really great. So for those who don't know, it's a theory developed by Christine Mizerondino. It's kind of a really brilliant way to describe what people with chronic medical conditions or disabilities go through daily, because it can be really hard to sort of explain to your friends what it's like.
Right.
You know, because they don't have a context for what's going on in your body, basically. Right.
Also, especially if you have, like, a more invisible illness or pain, know, like mental illness or chronic pain of some kind, it can be very hard to describe because there's no, like, outward physical signs.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the name of this blog where the spoon theory was developed is called But You Don't Look Sick.
Right.
Which is totally something I can relate to. So essentially, people who don't have a chronic health condition and or a disability have an unlimited amount of spoons, so to speak. So spoons are kind of a metaphor. So they have an unlimited amount of spoons that they can use every day. But someone like me, for example, who gets chronic headaches, I don't have an unlimited amount of spoons. So I have like a limited amount that I can expend toward daily activities. So if I have 12 spoons today, one spoon might go toward reading emails. Another spoon might go toward walking a short distance to like the store, et cetera, et cetera. And once I'm all out of quote unquote spoons for the day, I'm spent. And the amount of spoons you can use on any given day really can vary because there's definitely some days that are better, some days that are worse. So it's like a really great way for people who have a chronic illness or pain or a disability to explain to their friends and family what it's like to go through. And it's really great for people who don't know what it's like to read it and to try to understand what it's like to live like this. So yeah, thank you to Carrie too for sharing that on our Facebook group, because we haven't talked about it on the show, but it's definitely a great thing to discuss.
It is. It is. And I just want to say thank you to our listeners who are so caring, compassionate, and share things like spoon theory and contact us about, you know, their own struggles. And it's the best part of doing the show.
All right, Devin. So let's get into some Trump land bullshit. Mm-hmm. And the first story we have is this bananas, you know, a bananas rally, which is like volume 179,372.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, just another day that ends in Y. It's another fucking Trump rally.
I was going to say, like, sky blue, water wet. Trump has a weird fucking rally in the middle of a city that he has no business being in.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like, yeah, okay. He went to Phoenix and the mayor was like, do not come here.
Exactly.
Like, explicitly, like, we don't want you.
Plus, I feel like, especially, we just talked about the Secret Service running out of money. We just talked about, like, him not governing. Like, what the hell is he doing in Phoenix? You know what? Whatever. A little bit of self-care here. I'm not going to ask that question.
Yeah, I'm like, we could go down a dark rabbit hole.
But before we get into this sort of bananas Arizona rally, let's briefly discuss his bananas Afghanistan speech from Monday night.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, so he had that Afghanistan speech Monday and then the rally on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so this Afghanistan speech has been sort of like hyped as like they've made decisions about the Afghanistan war and he's going to, you know, talk about it and whatever. And so basically he read off of a teleprompter and he wouldn't divulge details about his plan. And then the pundits all gave him high marks. I mean,
I feel like we're living in an endless version of Groundhog's Day.
Seriously. So Maggie Hamerman from New York Times said, quote, POTUS gave his best speech as POTUS earlier that, you know, and it just, people keep fucking saying that. And it's yes, the bar is so low that speaking is worthy of praise. Like, you gotta be fucking kidding me.
Well, in that morning, she couldn't stop talking about all of the mistakes Hillary Clinton made during the campaign. But then, like, that evening, Trump doesn't shit his pants, and he gave his best speech, like, ever. Like,
okay, I cannot stress this enough, because I did not watch the speech live, because I will not dignify that man with my primetime attention, but I did record it and watch it later. He used the word loser in a speech as the president addressed to the American people. He referred to terrorists as losers.
Yeah, not like, the most dignified
right?
or stately speech.
Right, so, but that's totally fucking presidential.
Well, totally. It's funny that you say you don't give him your primetime attention, because I actually try to never watch him. I think we've talked about this on the podcast before. I don't find value in listening to him. I read about what happens, but listening to him makes my skin crawl. And yes. I'm like, I don't need to hear what he has to say. You know, CNN, you don't have to carry all this shit. Well, I mean, like a speech from the president, sure. But the rallies, I'm like, you don't have to carry,
you don't have to
carry
cover
this
that.
Shit live. Yeah. But like, I find that my time is more valuable than watching the president speak, which is a very sad state.
Right. Oh, 100%. And the only reason I ended up watching him live was because that was what Rachel Maddow's show was about that night.
Yeah.
I sat down to watch Rachel Maddow and it was his speech. And I was like, well, I'm here. So
I know. I'm like, can you at least not pick the time slot when Rachel Maddow is doing her thing? Like,
come on.
have some respect. But also let's talk about how the Washington Post White House bureau chief Philip Rucker also said about this speech. Quote, tonight is a new President Trump acknowledging a flip-flop and talking about gravity of office, history, and substance.
Okay.
Which he just got totally lambasted on Twitter.
Okay. There is no new President Trump. There will never be a no new President Trump. And let's stop trying to make fetch fucking happen.
Yeah.
Let's stop trying to make new President Trump happen. It's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. There will never be a pivot. Like, let it go. Make like Elsa and let it the fuck go. Like... Let It the Fuck Go is, by the way, the director's cut of Frozen.
Yeah, right?
Amazing they were able to add two syllables.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so that was Monday evening. That's just kind of to prime for what happened on Tuesday.
Right.
So on Tuesday night, Trump traveled to Phoenix to do a campaign rally, which, can we take a moment to appreciate how absolutely absurd it is that a sitting president has been doing regular fucking campaign rallies since he took office? Like, he won't stop.
And it's also very frustrating because, you know, you said to stop and do a campaign rally and my brain didn't automatically go record scratch what?
Yeah.
Like it should have. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yeah, like sky blue, water wet. Trump does a fucking campaign rally.
Yeah. And it's like, I know that Trump is shirking all kinds of norms and it's throwing off sort of our collective setting for quote unquote political normalcy. But I do think it's important that we recognize how abnormal this event is, first and foremost, and that he's been doing shit like this since he took office, and he's like already, you know, he's already running for re-election.
Yeah,
like, legitimately, he's literally running for re-election in 2020, and it's August 2017. And also Ben Carson, who is the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, he was also there. Which, by the way, violation of the Hatch Act. Can't do that.
Wait, apparently that's not a thing anymore, though.
Apparently that's not a thing anymore, because plenty of Trump administration officials and aides and staffers have, you know, flirted with the Hatch Act a little bit.
Right, exactly. At took it to dinner.
Yeah, like, and it's like the goalposts have moved so far in just in like 6 or 7 months of this administration that we've like pushed them off the cliff and into like the fucking abyss. Like there are no goalposts anymore.
Yeah, I feel like this is something Sarah Kendzior talks a lot about, where she's like, you know, you don't realize how far you've moved until you go back 6 months and, you know, what seemed ridiculous 6 months ago now seems totally normal.
It's like democratic backsliding, like it what is. Carlos Maza has talked about. Okay, so let's talk about the rally itself.
Fun.
We alluded to this, but spoiler alert, it was the same old fucking Trump. Again, no new President Trump, not going to happen. And I don't want to delve too deeply into the specifics of what he said, because it's honestly, it's nothing new, and it's never going to be new, despite pundits' best hopes for that sort of quote-unquote pivot.
Yeah.
But here are some low lights. Can you take us through some of the low lights, Devin?
I feel like Vanna White. Like, and here we are with some low lights.
With the bullshit.
Yeah, the bullshit. So he attacked the press and said, quote, they're bad people, which is almost just like, I feel like he should just get that tattooed on his forehead at this point.
Uh-huh.
He recited one of his post-Charlottesville statements, but left out the part where he talked about many sides, as if no one would notice that he's changed the message.
Oh, yeah. And apparently he, like, rambled on for, like, 10 minutes about it. Like, it was this whole, like, weird, like, stream of consciousness thing.
I believe that. And he said, quote, they're trying to take away our culture, which is just a dog whistle way of saying, you know, the racist dog whistle, if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, it's a, I mean, it's a complete dog whistle. Like, it's a wolf howl. Like, there's no way that's, like, even a dog whistle. It's so blatant.
Yeah, it's so blatant. And then he also, and this was particularly weird to me, at least, he threatened a government shutdown if he doesn't get funding for the fucking border wall. To which I'm just like, do you not understand how this works at all? Well,
can we talk about how he bragged the entire campaign about how Mexico would pay for it? And Mexico was like, no. Middle fingers up, fuck you, dude. And so now he's like, doesn't want the government to proceed, basically, if he doesn't get the American taxpayers to pay for it.
Right.
To which even Paul Ryan was like, we're not going to shut down the government over this. Like, that's essentially what he said. He was like, no. I just want to read this lead from NPR because I just feel like it sums everything up perfectly. They said, quote, the only thing that's surprising is if you're surprised by it. So it's like, the rally, distinct. Nothing new. This is just another day that ends in Y. Again, there is no new President Trump. Never going to happen. And his presidency really came as advertised. This is who he said he was.
Right. I feel like that is the most frustrating part to me is when people are like, oh, you know, we didn't know it was going to be like this. And like, he fucking told you it was going to be like this.
Yeah. I remember a tweet that came into my timeline that said basically like if journalists covered President Trump as they covered candidate Trump, like basically President Trump might not have even happened.
Right.
You know, like they just didn't scrutinize him enough. And I actually really appreciated Don Lemon's comments immediately following the rally. So here's part of what he said. Quote, what we've witnessed is a total eclipse of the facts. Someone who came on stage and lied directly to the American people. He's unhinged. It's embarrassing. I don't mean for us, the media, because he went after us, but for the country. This is who we elected president of the United States. A man who's so petty, he has to go after people who he deems to be his enemies like an imaginary friend of a six-year-old. His speech was without thought. It was without reason. It was devoid of facts. It was devoid of wisdom. There was no gravitas. He's a man clearly wounded by the rational people who are abandoning him in droves, meaning those business people and the people in Washington now who are questioning his fitness for office and whether he is stable. A man backed into a corner, it seems, by circumstances beyond his control and beyond his understanding. And I was like, man, say this, Don Lemon. Like,
yeah, seriously. Yes. I feel like he had some feelings that he wanted to share with us. Yeah,
he was like, it was perfect, I think.
It was. So now let's talk about Joe Arpaio, sorry, who Trump alluded to pardoning during his rally. But he didn't actually do it. But I guess now it's being reported that the White House has prepared paperwork for Trump to be able to actually pardon him.
Yeah. And so Arpaio, for those who don't know, was the sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona for over two decades. And he lost his reelection campaign in 2016. So he was found guilty last month of criminal contempt for disregarding a court order in a racial profiling case and is scheduled to be sentenced on October 5th.
Okay.
And the racial profiling case pertains to his department targeting Latino residents in an effort to, quote unquote, round up undocumented immigrants. So under this incredibly cruel practice, Latinos were 4 to 9 times more likely to be pulled over in traffic stops. And a court ruled a few years ago that the tactics were illegal and must stop, but they didn't. So that's why he's in trouble.
Got it. Okay. And then have you heard of Tent City?
Yes.
So it's a quote unquote temporary outdoor jail in Phoenix, which could reach temperatures of upwards of 130 degrees.
Yeah. In the summer, it's especially brutal.
Yeah. And it remained open for 24 years.
Yeah. They just announced the new sheriff. Just announced that they were going to close it.
Right. And so Arpaio literally bragged that it was a concentration camp, and Amnesty International called it, quote, inhumane.
Yeah, so that just gives you a sense of how cruel and awful Joe Arpaio is.
Right.
Like, he's a vile human being. And, of course, he was an early supporter of Trump. And, of course, he was also someone that fueled that racist birther conspiracy theory. And also, like, went even, like, 3 steps ahead of Trump on this. Like, he was, like, even more intense than Trump about this, about this birtherism.
Of like, course he was.
After Obama produced his long-form birth certificate, Arpaio said that it was a computer-generated forgery. So all class, that guy. All class.
Which someone who says the term computer-generated forgery has no idea what a computer-generated forgery is. I'm just going to say it.
No.
Also, by the way, just totally background here, more than 70 civil rights organizations have urged Trump not to pardon Arpaio.
Yeah.
So, you know, as the USA Today editorial board wrote, quote, invoking the presidential pardon power for Arpaio would further shred whatever semblance of moral authority the president retains. A pardon would also have a potentially chilling effect on Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation by signaling targets of that inquiry that the president might let them off the hook, even if they refuse to cooperate.
Yeah, that's a really interesting note.
It is.
So
it
kind is. Of signaling that he'll try to protect political allies.
Right.
And he'll try to target people who are sort of gunning for him.
Right.
Okay, so that's the rally. That's all I want to talk about, this fucking rally.
Literally no more.
No more. But let's talk about this new reporting on the transgender military ban.
Yes.
So the Wall Street Journal has reported that the White House will send guidance to the Pentagon on Trump's transgender military ban, including instructions to reject transgender applicants in the coming days. So it's apparently coming down the pike.
Got it.
And you may remember that Trump announced this on Twitter in late July with no plan in place. Like, even the Joint Chiefs were caught off guard by this, for example. You know, which made people wonder if and when this would happen. Well, now it appears that the Trump administration is in final stages of essentially pre-implementation.
Right, right. I mean, just let's take a moment of silence to recognize the fact that the president used Twitter to break major policy, but, you know.
That's totally on brand for Trump.
It is.
To just spout off on Twitter and not have any plan in place. Like, right. There's, this man should not be president.
No.
For so many reasons, that being one of them.
I know. So among the memo's directions, which would give Defense Secretary James Mattis 6 months to put the policy into action, the military is to stop admitting transgender people. And for current transgender troops, the Pentagon should consider a service member's ability to deploy when determining whether to expel them. And that feels pretty nebulous, and it really highlights how ridiculous this whole policy is.
How do they even evaluate the ability right. to deploy? Like, right. What does that even mean? You know?
Right. Ashley Broadway Mack, president of the American Military Partner Association, said in response, quote, Trump's foolhardy decision that transgender...
Foolhardy.
A little struggling this morning. Foolhardy assertion that transgender service members are not able to deploy is simply not rooted in fact. Transgender service members are just as deployable as any other service member. These brave men and women are already risking their lives for this country around the world. And let's remember that the Human Rights Campaign found that 26% of the trans community serves in the military at some point during their lives, which is twice the rate of the general population.
It literally makes zero sense.
Why
you would turn down people who want to serve.
Right.
And who are serving at twice the rate as the general population. Like, I don't see how this helps anyone. I don't see how this makes America safer. Like, this is just a policy rooted in bigotry.
Right.
And transphobia.
Right, exactly. And I mean, it couldn't be clearer, because this memo also instructs the Pentagon to stop paying for transgender troops' medical treatment regimens, which is just so unspeakably cruel.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it before, but the military spends 5 times as much on Viagra as it would on transgender military care. So this guidance just makes no good sense in any way, and it's obviously just the manifestation of deeply held transphobia.
It makes no sense. There's no particularly good benefits to this besides the fact that you're treating, you know, people like second class citizens.
Right.
And it's disgusting. And,
you
know, that all being said, it's unclear if the memo itself is finalized or not. So a formal guidance from the president has not been issued yet to the Pentagon that we know of. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, if it's implemented, which it seems like it probably will be, it will reverse a policy from Obama's Department of Defense and still under review that would have allowed transgender individuals to openly serve in the military. And so, again, elections have consequences. Like, this is the difference between a Democratic administration and a Republican one. And let's be clear, Democrats have not always been great on LGBT issues, on trans issues. They've been quite shitty at sometimes.
Right, right.
But we were moving in a better direction.
Right, right.
You know, and now we're there's so many things that are being rolled back, so many civil rights. And I feel like I have a friend who's trans, and she always says they always come after trans people first.
Right.
They always come after trans people first.
Right.
And I think we're just seeing it in so many different ways, how many different, like, civil rights are under attack under this administration.
It's
this
true.
Being one of the most egregious examples. And Parker Malloy from Upworthy had a great piece where she interviewed trans people who had served in the military, and she talked to them about the ban. And I feel like we don't see enough of that in journalism. Like,
it's true.
Let's talk to actual trans people and see what they
actual
think.
Actual trans people in the military.
And yeah, who served in the military. Whose sort of perspectives are probably the most important,
right,
you know, in this situation. So one woman, Kristen Carella, said, quote, "Trump's decision is a stunning reversal that can only be taken as a slap in the face. Personally, to every transgender person who has ever served, it accomplishes nothing more than making sure transgender people remain a demonized and hated group that right-wing politicians can target to scare their base and push their agendas. Of course, all of this demonization ensures that the ignorant violence, which leads bigots to murder transgender people in the streets, particularly trans women of color, will continue." And I think that's it's a good point. I mean,
yeah.
None of this ever happens in a vacuum.
Right.
And it's going to have other effects into other aspects of trans lives.
Absolutely. And it's just it's keeping this policy in place and keeping this policy alive. So this policy of transphobia, basically.
Yeah. I mean, they're legislating transphobia.
Exactly.
Very clearly.
Right. And also, by the way, last point. 18 of our allies allow trans people to serve without issue.
So these are allies of the United States.
Of the United States. So it's extra absurd that the U.S. won't be leading on this issue. Like,
yeah, we're supposed to be the leader of the free world, and in so many ways we do not lead. And this is one of them. All right, Devin, let's get into our third block, which is all about them emails, apparently.
Dem emails.
There's some email-related stories. Doesn't have to do with Hillary Clinton, but it is a Russia update.
So, I feel like there's just, like, keywords. Like, email, Russia, Hillary. Like, if you just, like, put them in, like, a blender, you're going to get some sort of, like, political story.
I feel like this, if Trump gets taken down by emails, that'll be poetic in a lot of ways.
It'll be so sweet and satisfying. So anyway,
yeah, why are we talking about emails, Devin?
So apparently there are some new emails.
Yeah, actually email singular, probably.
Probably singular, but you know.
Probably also plural.
I'm going to take my fun where I can get it.
Yeah.
So CNN exclusively reported on Wednesday that congressional investigators have unearthed an email from top Trump aide Rick Dearborn that referenced a previously unreported effort to arrange a meeting last year between Trump campaign officials and Putin.
So totally a small thing.
Yeah,
just a little detail.
Like, you know, Putin. Whatever. So basically, Dearborn was acting as a third party to possibly help set up this meeting.
Yeah.
And Dearborn, now, fun fact, is Trump's deputy chief of staff, who previously served as then-Senator Jeff Sessions' chief of staff and was a policy aide for the campaign.
Yeah.
So he just works for all the hashtag noted dickwads.
Yep. Oh, yeah. That's like his career. It's like his whole resume just says noted dickwads hashtag.
And so the person was only identified in the email Dearborn sent as being from WV, which one source said was a reference to West Virginia. But it's unclear who the individual is, what he or she was seeking, and whether Dearborn even acted on the request.
Yeah, so we don't even know if he tried to set up a meeting. We just know that he received an email about, he sent an email about possibly setting it up.
Right. And
or like someone wanting to help them set it up, basically.
Right. Right. However, its existence suggests that the Russians may have been looking for another entry point into the Trump campaign to see if anyone wanted to rendezvous at collude o'clock.
That's my favorite rendezvous time, Kahlua o'clock.
Yep. And let's remember that the FBI saw intelligence last summer suggesting that Russian operatives tried to use Trump advisors like Carter Page to infiltrate the campaign. When you say all of this out loud in a sentence, it's really like,
can we call Carter Page hashtag noted ignoramus Carter Page?
Seriously.
I feel like the word ignoramus is not used as much as it should be.
He is not the brightest bulb of the box, Carter Page.
There's not a lot of competence.
not a lot going on up there.
Yeah, actually, so interestingly enough, so this email that is relevant to this Dearborn guy, it occurred in June 2016, around the same time of the recently revealed Trump Tower meeting between the Russians and Don Jr., Kushner, and Manafort. Surely, so all a coincidence.
Right. So it really was Kahlua o'clock. And it was June 2016.
But that's the thing. It's like, how many more indications of potential collusion can actually be used as evidence? Like, well, it feels so obvious, but it's like, what can be upheld in, like, a court of law, for example?
I know. People keep saying there's, like, lots of smoke, but no fire yet. I'm like, what the fuck is meeting in Trump Tower in June 2016 if not a fucking fire?
I know. It's like if I were trying to roast marshmallows into this, like field of smoke, right? It would burn. I would be able to make us some more.
Exactly.
That's how I feel. That's my
it's
metaphor.
So true. It's so true.
So also investigators are looking into whether Dearborn played a role in potentially arranging two meetings between Kislyak and Sessions during the campaign.
Sessions perjured himself.
I know. I can't. So Dearborn was involved in helping arrange an April 2016 event at the Mayflower Hotel where Trump delivered a major foreign policy address. So Kislyak and Sessions were there, but it's unclear as to whether they interacted at this event. Like, that's still kind of under question. But we know that they met a couple of times.
Right,
previously.
Right. Well, if they did meet, they didn't actually talk about, like, the campaign.
They just talked about their kids.
Their kids.
Just lots of coincidences. Right. Like, nothing substantial. That's always what they said. Oh, we didn't talk about anything. Yeah, fucking right.
Yeah, fucking right. Right.
But also, Dearborn wasn't the only one in the Trump orbit emailing about potential Russia meetings. Because of course not. So again, emails plural. Emails plural.
Yeah.
As the Washington Post reported in April, Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos sent an email to top campaign officials in March 2016 about arranging meetings with Russians. And this continued for months, by the way.
Of course it did.
And also, the subject line of the March email was, quote, meeting with Russian leadership. Including Putin.
Oh, wow. Oh, so they're just not being subtle about it anymore.
I know, like, obvious subject lines are, like, a thing. Like, remember the Don Jr. one? Russia-Clinton-private and confidential. Like, come on.
Yeah, I love it. But later in the summer.
Oh, yeah. I love it, except, later in the summer. My favorite Demi Lovato hit. And also on April 27th, Papadopoulos wrote to then campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, quote, Putin wants to host the Trump team when the time is right. Like, what the fuck?
What the actual fuck?
Again, I have a marshmallow in this field of smoke and it is burning. I'm able to make us a more.
Exactly.
I'm just saying. Also, just for reference, the emails from Dearborn and Papadopoulos were included in the batch of 20,000 emails that the Trump campaign handed over to multiple congressional committees earlier this summer. So it's among, like, the documents that they have and that they're sort of combing through, I think. So, yeah, I think that, again, lots of smoke, potentially some fire,
lots of
burnt marshmallows in my metaphors.
Not to torture this metaphor or anything.
I'm going to beat this metaphor with a dead marshmallow.
But these fuckers are going down, is basically what we're saying.
They're going to. Let's also talk about some bits and nibbles. So these are, like, some other stories that are circling about that don't have a lot of details, but we think are important to highlight.
Absolutely. Also, I would just like to point out that Sarah has kind of come up with this little mini category called Bits and Nibbles, and I think it's the most adorable thing ever.
I know. It's like collusion cat food. That's exactly what it feels like.
Now with 100% more treason.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So our first little bits and nibbles, Glenn Simpson, one of the key figures behind the Steele dossier, also side tangent.
Yes.
There's no way Christopher Steele's real name is Christopher Steele. He gave himself that name. I'm just saying.
It's definitely like, we don't need to have any more James Bond movies. Like, I just want a Christopher Steele movie. Exactly. That is a spy name if I've ever fucking heard one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this guy, Glenn Simpson, who was in the, behind the Steele dossier, appeared in a closed session before the Senate Judiciary Committee for 10 hours on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And he turned over 40,000 pages of documents.
Yeah.
That is a shit ton of documents.
Yeah. And just for some extra context, Simpson is the guy that hired Christopher Steele to compile this like sort of infamous dossier mm-hmm. that alleged that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia. It's also where the P-tape allegations come from. If you didn't hear that, Devin just did a psst in the microphone because we're 12. This is what happens when we're apart from each other for too long.
I know, right? We have like a grounding effect on each other that goes away pretty quickly.
Yeah, it goes away. Also, remember that some parts of the dossier have been corroborated.
Yes.
Corroborated by the FBI. And Simpson says he stands by the dossier's findings. And his lawyer repeated some expert's assertion that it's, quote, a roadmap of the for the investigation. So
yeah.
They're like, have at it, like completely dissect this shit because we stand by it. And like, as Rachel Maddow pointed out last night, nothing from the dossier has been disproven. And a lot
right.
of it seems to line up with reported stories.
Right, right. And honestly, just as pieces of information become like get corroborated, that does lend sort of, credibility to the whole like package of documents.
Yeah, definitely. And also, interestingly enough, so Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley also said during a town hall on Wednesday that the committee might release the transcripts of Simpson's closed door testimony. So the 10 hours of testimony that Simpson did, which apparently Simpson was like, do it. Like, we're totally fine. And apparently they have to vote, like the committee has to vote.
Okay.
And so this constituent was like, I want you to vote yes, like, when
right.
are you going to release it? And, like,
right.
Grassley was kind of, like, hemming and hawing, like, oh, well, like, we have to send it to Simpson and his lawyer and make sure there's no disputes in the transcript. And, like, Simpson's lawyer was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, this is your document. We're cool.
Let her rip.
I also
love, like, you know, we're living in the upside down because people are calling for 10 hours of transcripts to be released. And you know people are going to read that shit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to read that shit.
100%. 100%.
You know?
Also, buried in this ABC story where we're talking about, you know, Glenn Simpson is a little detail that one Christopher Steele has met with the FBI and provided agents with the names of his sources for the allegations of the, like, in the dossier.
ABC really buried the lead there, huh?
They buried the lead a little bit there. So, again, lots of smoke, kind of
marshmallowy.
We're feeling pretty marshmallowy. Okay, so on to the next collusion cat food nugget. So the New York Times had an extensive story on Tuesday about the disintegration of Mitch McConnell and Trump's relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
So within the story was a little detail about how on August 9th, Trump called McConnell to express sort of anger over McConnell's perceived refusal to protect him from the Trump-Russia investigation. Again, which is something that he does, seems to do a lot, which is like, hey, can you step in and obstruct justice for me? No?
And they're
okay. Still
okay.
President.
Okay, cool. Yeah, right.
And interestingly enough, okay, so this was an interesting observation by Sarah Kendzior. She said, quote, if you've forgotten what else Trump was up to on August 9th, that was the day we worried he'd provoke a nuclear strike on Guam.
Oh, my God. I read that. And my mind was just like,
but it's like, it's exactly what people were worried about with
right.
this presidency is
right.
that he would totally react in big aggressive ways because he felt personally slighted. I mean, that's why
yeah.
you don't elect someone like motherfucking Trump to be the most powerful person in the world. Just saying.
I know. And
elections
I mean,
have consequences.
Yeah. Well, who was it that told us like a year ago that someone who can be provoked by a tweet really shouldn't be president? Was that?
I think her name was
Hillary fucking Clinton.
Hillary fucking Clinton. That was her middle name. Fucking Clinton.
Fucking Clinton.
Someone was like, you know, they're like, yeah. Like Hillary warned us, but also Trump warned us. Like
That's
he was
true.
Pretty blatant about
That's
who
true.
He was.
That's fair.
But yes. But
That's
also
fair.
Hillary, I think it was important for her to highlight that. Like she
right.
was acting like a leader. So
right.
Okay, so last bits and nibble. Politico also reported on Wednesday evening that Trump has clashed with multiple Republican senators over Russia.
Yeah, and, that feels right.
Yeah. And so they included, apparently there was a call with Tom Tillis, who's a Republican from North Carolina, that was on August 7th. So 2 days before Trump was mad at McConnell.
Right.
So where Trump voiced his displeasure over the bill Tillis had crafted with Chris Coons, who's a Democrat from Delaware, on a bill designed to protect Robert Mueller.
Right.
And like he basically was like, I don't like this bill. And it's like, that's cool. No one fucking cares. Right. Like, fuck off.
Go fuck off.
I don't think that's what the Republicans said, but that's what I'm saying.
Right.
yeah. And so one senior GOP aide who's quoted in the story said, quote, it seems like Trump is always just focused on Russia. And I would be, too, if I was meeting everyone at collusion o'clock every damn day.
Seriously, I'd be worried. Like, he should be worried.
Yeah.
Okay, Sarah, so let's move on from collusion cat food to, to our gratitude check. So, Sarah, what are you grateful for today?
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing I'm grateful for is a federal judge in Texas.
Texas has been a goddamn mixed bag lately.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like every other, like, week, like, your gratitude check is...
They're either in dickwads or in a gratitude check. Yep. Yeah. And, like, especially shout out to the independent judiciary of the Lone Star State, because they've appeared on several recent gratitude checks of mine.
Yeah.
Like, it just keeps happening.
Yeah.
U.S. District Judge Nelva Gonzalez-Ramos ruled on Wednesday that Senate Bill 5, which was signed by Greg Abbott in June, doesn't absolve Texas lawmakers from responsibility for discriminating against Latino and Black voters when they crafted one of the nation's strictest voter ID laws in 2011. So she was like, boom, bitch, no. That's like in non-legal terms what happened.
Right, right, right. Like all this legal documentation just really means
boom,
bitch, no.
Bitch, fuck
no.
You.
Fuck yeah. You.
Yeah, so she also ruled that the state failed to prove that the new law would accommodate such voters moving forward. So she was like, this is still like targeting minority voters and it's bullshit.
Right.
What's interesting is that this ruling is the latest in a 6-year battle over Texas's laws restricting what forms of ID are accepted at the polls. So last year, the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the 2011 law disproportionately burdened minority voters who were less likely to have one of 7 forms of ID the state required them to show at the polls. And then Ramos, who's this judge, upped the ante in April, ruling that the state discriminated on purpose. So she was like, you fuckers are so fucking obvious. Like, fuck off.
Again, I fucking see you.
Not her words. Not legal words, but mine.
It feels like Obama's anger interpreter.
Yeah.
Luther.
Yes. That's a great skit. That's a great skit. So the judge weighed possible remedies for the state's violation of the VRA and the U.S. Constitution, and that's when Texas leaders pushed SB 5, which was just struck down at court. Mm-hmm. But the problem was that SB 5 didn't meaningfully expand the types of photo IDs that can qualify. So, again, the judge was basically like, this is the same old bullshit, you motherfuckers. Like, you can't get this past me.
Like, I am awake, so yeah, I can see this.
I see you. So Ari Berman, who is a voting rights, like, expert, scholar, he said on Twitter that this is the 8th time since 2011 that federal courts have ruled that Texas has intentionally discriminated against minorities. So he's like, this is the 8th fucking time in 7 years.
At what point are we like, it's been 8 times in you know, 6-7 years. When do we get to revoke their ability to make voting laws? Because apparently they're fucking bad at it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that. And again, I think this points to Republicans legislating white supremacy at all costs and not quitting, right?
But, right.
So this is like the media's detail. Unless appeal courts step in, this judge's sweeping ruling could mean Texans wouldn't have to show a photo ID at the polls in future elections, which would be huge, right?
It would be huge, yeah.
Although, what do you know, hashtag noted dickwad, Ken Paxton, who's Texas's attorney general, was basically like, oh no, we'll definitely appeal, because we're racist motherfuckers.
Seriously. And it's not funny, like, haha funny, but before we started, like, doing this political podcast, in California you don't have to show ID to vote. And I had no idea that that wasn't the standard.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's so many predatory ID laws whose purpose it is to suppress minority vote because they go for Democrats.
Yep.
An interesting sort of slash infuriating note, Texas. So you said, like, why aren't we restricting certain states from making these laws? Well, Texas used to be on the list of places needing federal permission to change their election laws.
Oh.
But then when the Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013, they wiped the list clean.
Oh, great.
So that's among the many things that made it easier, essentially, for states to suppress minority votes.
Right.
I would say there's still a lot to do, but Wednesday's ruling was definitely a positive step toward pushing back against voter suppression laws.
Sure.
Danielle Lang, who's a senior counsel for the Campaign Legal Center, said, quote, "It doesn't matter how many times the state tries to dress a law in sheep's clothing. Its intent is to discriminate and prevent hundreds of thousands of eligible voters from casting ballots." And that is the damn truth. And we can't, again, I've said this many times, like, we can't really call ourselves a true democracy while we still have these completely horrible, vile, discriminatory voting laws in place. Like,
These
aren't really fair elections that we're having. So, yay, federal court in Texas. The second thing I'm grateful for is just titled, "Holy shit, this story." That was from BuzzFeed.
Yeah.
And it's courtesy of a write-up from the Ask a Manager blog, which deals with sort of all kinds of career-related inquiries. And boy, does this story just take the fucking cake, Devin. Like, it is bananas.
No, okay. I read this. I was like, oh, God.
Okay, so this dude writes to the blog with, like, a totally typical work-related problem. Like, we've all been here. You see, at one point over 10 years ago, he was living with a girlfriend, Sylvia, who he had dated for 3 years. She wanted the relationship to progress much faster than he wanted to, so he did what any well-adjusted and mature adult would do. What do you think he did, Devin?
I'm guessing not have a serious discussion about the state of the relationship and mutually make a decision to move on.
No, not that.
Okay, good.
So he waited until she visited her family over Christmas break, and he full-on just packed up his shit and left the country. Like, straight-up fucking ghosted a woman he dated for 3 years and lived with for two.
No.
Yes. He said, and then he said, like, sort of about this, he said, quote, "I simply wanted to avoid being untangled in a breakup drama."
What?
Which, it's like, except you totally did the most ridiculously dramatic thing ever. Like, fucking men.
Seriously.
Anyway, okay, so then he has the nerve to write this next. Quote, "Sylvia was rather emotional and became obsessed with the relationship, tracking me down and even causing various scenes with my parents and friends."
Right?
Which is, like, probably because she was worried you were in danger and or felt like she was owed a fucking explanation and you were being a cowardly dickwad. Or that.
Right. Seriously. Or that. Like, you know, or that.
Yeah. But she was just emotional and terrible.
See, this is really what drives me fucking bananas, because it's like, oh, women are so emotional and all, you know, whatever. And it's like, this guy literally packed up and left so he wouldn't have to talk to his longtime girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. No. None of that flies with us.
Yeah,
dude.
Like, no.
No. Okay, so what does this have to do with work?
Good. Actually, I was just about to ask that question.
It's like, this is a career advice blog. What does this have to do with your profession? Well, apparently it's been 10 years and this dickwad has a great job as a math teacher at an international school. And he writes, you know, Sylvia, you know, I've moved on with my life. Sylvia was forgotten history until now.
dun, dun, dun.
So guess what motherfucking happens?
Oh, my God, please. Oh, my God. Tell me.
So the school had to hire a new director.
Oh, my
and
God.
And guess who it ended up being?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Was it our friend Sylvia?
It was motherfucking Sylvia.
It was motherfucking Sylvia.
Yeah, that's right. His new about-to-be boss is his ex-girlfriend, who he unceremoniously ghosted and dumped by default.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Which is just like, I love this story. It's in my gratitude checks because karma is just a beautiful thing sometimes. And women have the best long game.
They do.
And this instance seems like it's totally unintentional. Like, she probably has no idea that this guy works at this school. So I just love this story because karma is just beautiful. And, like, I love a woman coming out on top. Like, she's above him. She's, progressed in her career. She's his boss. Like, he's fucked. It's great.
It's great. Everyone's happy.
Yeah. And the actual response from the Ask a Manager editor to this dickwad is great, too. We'll link to the full blog in the show notes. But I just love this story.
That's a really great story that literally made my whole morning better.
Yeah. Okay, Devin, what are you grateful for today?
Okay, so this I'm going to talk about the convention that I'm at.
Okay.
It's called Podcast Movement, and it is currently in Anaheim, but it's been all over the country. So it is a convention for podcasters, and it really has been a wholly wonderful experience. I've spoken to literal, like, rock stars of the industry and people who are here to learn more about podcasting before they launch their show.
Nice.
I mean, it's really cool. And I've met people of all ages and races, although it is absolutely overwhelmingly white and male.
Of course.
I'm just going to say, like, there are a lot of...
If you're a white dude and you don't have a podcast...
Like, what are you even doing with your
what's
life?
What's happening?
Exactly. Exactly. And I went to the podcasting, like, award show last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I did definitely notice that the winners in all the categories were white men.
Of course.
No matter who was nominated, no matter what the category was, it was a lot of white men.
Yep.
So it is definitely a pervasive problem. But,
it definitely follows larger patterns in society,
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, what the best part of this has been talking to people about their deepest, darkest passion. You know, you literally wear it on your badge. Like, the name of your podcast is on your badge. And I've met people who do shows about everything from frog populations in North America to first person narratives to redefining wealth in America.
Nice.
I went to In-N-Out last night with a representative from Podbean, which is like a podcasting host, a radio personality who's launching her own podcast, and a guy who works with nonprofits to launch industry related podcasts. So we went to In-N-Out at like midnight and was like, I'm going to get a shake. And we just talked, you know, it was awesome.
Yeah.
And the collection of people in the room so far have had absolutely nothing in common except this platform.
And, like, the white guyness.
I will say that. There's a lot of white guys. But, you know, people that I would never have thought to talk to, I mean, they just have these, like, interesting stories. And it's been so wonderful to meet all of these people.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's really great. And that's kind of the last thing that I'm grateful for and I want to talk about. This community has been welcoming and friendly and supportive. Everyone I've met this far has a real passion for what they're talking about and just want to tell great stories.
Yeah.
I've felt so supported and respected here, and I wasn't sure that was going to happen. And there, like I said, there are a lot of white guys here hanging out. And there definitely is a little bit of a misogynistic undertone just because of kind of what podcasts are. I mean, if you think about it, it's, you know, like you said, if you're not white and male and you don't have a podcast, like, what are you doing with your life? And there have also been a lot of panels and discussions that feature women and women's stories, although overwhelmingly white women.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, we're new to the podcasting world, I've felt nothing but welcome here. And I, you know what, I love conventions in general for this purpose, because you all are at a convention for one purpose, and it's because you love something.
Yeah.
And loving something is kind of like a universal, like, bonding agent.
Yeah, you know? For sure.
So the love of something, and it's been really great. And, I've also met a lot of great female podcasters. I've been really great. And I want to do a quick shout out to a podcast I learned about here. I met this woman, Ariana, and we're, you know, my new friend, and she produces it. It's called Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Ooh.
They read a chapter each week from the books and treat it like a religious text. They have a blessing, and then people call in and tell their stories, and they talk about themes. And I've talked about this before, but Harry Potter is definitely a guiding principle in my life, and I can definitely see it as a religious text. And this podcast is awesome. The three of them met in divinity school, and the hosts are Harvard-trained chaplains. So definitely check it out. It is truly wonderful.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I love that gratitude check.
Yeah.
let's now dovetail into our listener gratitude checks.
Yes.
So the first one is from Anna. So she tagged us on Instagram and said her gratitude check was the whole goddamn award show. So she's referring to Black Girls Rock. And then she said, of course, Queen Maxine. And the post she tagged us in had the part of the speech where Maxine says, quote, those right-wing, ultra-conservative, alt-right haters would have me believe I'm too black, too confrontational, I'm too tough, and I'm too disrespectful of them. But now I know I'm simply a strong black woman.
Ooh, yeah, that's good.
So, so good. And I love that Anna tagged us in this post because it just gave me life.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. So our next listener gratitude check is from Anya. She said, quote, I moderated a panel at a games conference on Saturday. The panel was all women, four in total, including myself, which consisted of two queer women and two women of color, talking about the state of games in New York City as four professionals working in games in New York. I was told today it was the most attended panel at the entire conference.
Wow.
I know. And even more exciting to me is no one noticed the four people talking about the state of games were all women. We were just four professionals talking as experts in our field. And for a little more context, she said, quote, when I was first asked to moderate the panel, it was pitched to me as a women in games panel. I pushed back and said I didn't think that that was the most useful topic because while it's extremely important, having an all-female panel could be used for a larger impact. I also said I will not moderate an all-female panel that is just straight white cis women. The conference organizer agreed 100% and basically gave me free rein to come up with whatever topic I wanted and invite whomever I wanted to participate.
Nice.
I know. In my almost decade of working in games, this is the first time I have demanded a public speaking opportunity to be on my terms, and I'm thrilled that they were all met. It does help. The conference organizer is extremely proactive with diversity initiatives, so he was extremely excited and supportive with the state of games topic and finding an appropriate mix of women to speak. It's a small victory, but I'll be holding this one high for at least another week.
This is so awesome. I love this story. Thank you, Anya, for sharing it, because I feel like, and she kind of alluded to this, I feel like oftentimes these kind of conferences put underrepresented groups and on panels where they just talk about diversity and inclusion, which, like she said, is a worthy topic. But so often I hear from women, for example, that they just want to be able to speak about their field of expertise and just be seen merely as among the experts in that field. Like, they want to talk about their field. They want to talk about what they do, right?
Right.
And so I love that Anya pushed back. The organizer was receptive to her feedback, and she was able to make that impact. So I think that is not, I don't think that's a small victory. I think that's a big victory, Anya. Huge.
Okay, so it is Thursday, so it's time for the Hellion of the Week, and we have a winner. So, Sarah, who is the Hellion of the Week?
So it's a woman named Jenny Miller.
Who is Jenny Miller?
Yes, you might not have heard of her, but she was the Oregon woman who was mocked by Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin's wife, Louise Linton, on Instagram. So I don't know if you have read the story yet, but I'm going to give a little context to what happened. So, little backstory. On Monday, Louise Linton posted, alongside a photo of her and Mnuchin getting off a U.S. government plane, quote, great hashtag day trip to hashtag Kentucky. And then she had like a million hashtags. Hashtag nicest. Hashtag people. Hashtag beautiful. Hashtag countryside.
What?
Hashtag Roland Murray pants.
What?
Hashtag Tom Ford sunnies. Oh, hashtag Hermes scarf. Hashtag Valentino rock stud heels. Hashtag Valentino. Hashtag USA.
I think that last one's my favorite. Hashtag USA.
I love God the bless hashtag America. Beautiful and then hashtag people. It's like, you could have just did it in one.
Oh,
anyway,
girl,
that is just like, that is just way too many hashtags right in the caption. Like, you got to do it in a comment. If you're going to do a lot of hashtags, you got to do it in a comment below with the dots.
Yep.
Like, that's just how you Instagram. But that's not the point. Because what happened is, apparently, Jenny Miller's Instagram comment struck a nerve. So she said, quote, glad we could pay for your little getaway, hashtag deplorable. Because then, Devin, how did Louise Linton respond to this comment?
Okay. All right. I'm like getting up because this really bothers me. So she responded, cute. Aw. Did you think this was a personal trip? Adorable. Do you think the U.S. government paid for a honeymoon or personal travel? LOL. Have you given more to the economy than me and my husband, either as an individual earner in taxes or in self-sacrifice to your country? Fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we paid more taxes towards our day trip than you did. Pretty sure the amount we sacrificed per year is a lot more than you'd be willing to sacrifice if the choice was yours. You're adorably out of touch, which makes me want to fucking throw things.
You know what is not adorable? It's just how out of touch this woman, Louise Linton, clearly is. Because everyone was like, you sound like a fucking dickwad.
Seriously.
Like, because it's like, basically what she's saying in this comment is, I make a lot of money, poor me, I have to give a lot in taxes because of it, and I'm so much better than you. That's basically what she's saying. Like, she's kind of like, sort of touching on this, like, you know, I do more for our country because I'm rich, which is bullshit.
Right.
Like, as if people who make less money don't sacrifice a lot or are lazy or not hardworking or whatever. Like, you're the one who's out of touch, all right?
Well, and just the fact that she even responded to this, like, and it provoked such a response in her. I have to wonder, like, this obviously touched a nerve. Like, this got her really mad.
Of course, of course. And so you might be wondering, how does this relate to it being a Hellion of the Week, the sound right. like the Dickwad of the Week?
Right,
and
right, right.
It kind of is both.
It's both. But, it's always both.
Yeah, so predictably, Linton got lambasted on Twitter, and soon her account went private.
Sure, sure.
And Walter Schaub, who's quickly becoming another of my favorite former administration officials.
I love Walter Schaub.
Him and Preet Bharara are, like, mouthing like, off, and I love
so
it.
So good.
So he's the former director of the Office of Government Ethics, and he tweeted, quote, "Bad ethics tone from POTUS leads entitled appointee / freeloading spouse to ask not what they can do for the country, but what you can do for them."
Ooh, good. You know, when anyone can twist JFK's words.
Yes.
It's okay in my book.
Yeah, that's a good tweet. And, you know, apparently it's also very rare for people in Mnuchin's position to fly on government planes for domestic trips. So that was like even weirder.
Yeah, it's weird.
So anyway, why this is the Hellion of the Week, why Jenny Miller is the Hellion of the Week. So She is a registered Democrat, and she responded in an interview by saying, quote, "Maybe others will look at this storm that happened as a result of her words and realize that those types of behaviors are not okay." So I love that she stood her ground and was like, this isn't right. She clearly kind of like dug a hole and made this unforced error because she's like the one who's out of touch. So, yeah, you know, on the heels of this newfound attention, Miller also raised money for a friend who recently had a stroke, which is the amount they've raised is over $14,000, which is amazing. So I would say not bad for a day's work. You know, Jenny Miller yielded an unforced error for a Trumpland dickwad, elicited a public apology because Linton did end up apologizing. And then she also helped out a friend in a big way from this newfound attention. So I would say Hellion. That's some low-key Hellion shit right there. And I love it.
That's what we like. That's the Hellions we want to see in the world.
Yeah. All right, Devin. So let's get into some action items. And we only have one for today.
Yes.
So what is it?
Okay. So this is courtesy of Run for Something. They tweeted on Tuesday, quote, "Trump's rally tonight is a reminder. You're smarter, kinder, and more empathetic than our president. You're qualified to run for local office."
Yes.
And I just want to say, so I 100% agree. I mean, the emails we get from our listeners are so sharp and thoughtful. I mean, if there were more Hellions in office, our country would be in better shape.
Yes.
But this is also something that I've noticed at this convention. I know this is very weird. This is a little bit of a tangent. But a lot of people, a lot of women who talk about, like, you know, not wanting to launch their podcast, feeling like an imposter, the imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I talked to one woman and she said she wanted to run for office, but she would only do it after she got her law degree. She already has a master's in international relations and a 4-year undergraduate degree.
Wow.
And I was like, girl, no. Like, you are, you know.
And not that you have to have those degrees either.
No.
For office,
that's what I'm saying. I was saying, like, you know, you don't have to hold out for your law degree. Like, just go for it.
Yeah,
you know?
It reminds me of what Kirsten Gillibrand said.
Yes.
A few months back, she's like, men turn 30 and they like automatically think that they can run for Senate.
Yeah.
And like, women are like, I need 17 years of experience and a law degree and this before I can run for like city council. And it's like, no, you can't. I think if there's anything that, you know, I think that in the Trump era, especially women, do not ever think you're unqualified because look who is running the government right now.
Literally,
you are more than qualified. You are more than compassionate. You are more than competent.
Right. And that's every time, even if talking about running for office or even just starting a podcast, talking to these women at this convention, I'm like, you are qualified.
Yeah.
Like, you can do it.
Just do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so for those who don't know what Run for Something does, so they're an organization that helps recruit and support young people. So I think it's under 35. That's what their website says. And so they support young people running for office. And they're aiming to sort of build a deep Democratic bench. Like they want more young people involved. And I will also say that if you're over 35 and want to run, you definitely should. We need you to. Like, Devin and I just did a video on a congresswoman named Bella Abzug.
Yes.
And she didn't run until she was 50.
Yeah. And she made huge impacts.
So Run for Something is just one of many organizations that you can get involved with. And, you know, I feel a little bit like a hypocrite because I'm like, I'm not someone who wants to run for office. You know, I don't think that necessarily fits my skill set.
Right.
So it feels weird for me to be like, but you should. I'm not going to, but you should.
I mean, I do. I always think that I probably will run for office at some point.
Yeah.
So nice. We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, man, I guess the future of Hellbent, you know, like
is in question.
Like, I got to find a new co-host once you're like a senator, you know? That's what I'm thinking of.
Right.
But anyway, if you're thinking about running for office or like flirting with the idea, we just want to encourage you to do it. Because
yeah. Like Hellions are amazing. You're amazing.
Yeah. And like Run for Something said, you're smarter, kinder, and more empathetic than our president. You were qualified to run for local office. So do it.
I love that.
Okay, Devin, so that's it for today. Oh my gosh, we made it through another packed show and apart, which was hard. It's like, you know when you said on Monday that it was Trumpland bullshit, except with 100% more bullshit?
Yes.
I feel like us being apart for so long is like 100% sillier. Like this was definitely like, it was heavy on the silliness.
Heavy on the silly, that's totally true.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really great. I'm really glad we could do this episode. And we will see you back here on Monday. For more information on today's episode, please visit our website at www.hellbentpodcast.com. You'll find the articles we've discussed as well as additional resources. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at HellbentPod, and you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/HellbentPodcast. We also have a fan group called Dickwads Be Gone, which you can find on Facebook.
Please listen on iTunes and rate us 5 stars, because that's just like the rules of feminism. We also have a Patreon, and you can find us at patreon.com/hellbentpodcast. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and for $5 a month, you get access to exclusive content, mini podcasts, and behind-the-scenes looks at the making of Hellbent.